Hey, if you have a Bible before you, we're going to look at Ruth chapter 2 this morning. Ruth chapter 2, and I'm going to read that for us, the whole chapter, before we begin speaking about it. And so if you will now stand out of reverence for the word of the Lord, we're going to read Ruth chapter 2. We're continuing the story of Ruth and Naomi. And this part of the story is where Ruth meets Boaz. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man, of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him, in whose favor, or in whose sight I shall find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his young man, who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, "She's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young man not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." So she gleaned in the midst of the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her food, what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close to my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Well, I spent almost 20 years of my life in Kentucky. Kentucky is known for many things. If you go to the airport, you'll see that it's known for its bourbon, its basketball, its horses, and its rolling hills. If you've ever driven around Kentucky and you see the horse farms, you see the rolling hills and the picket fences that Kentucky is famous for. But what some people don't know is what creates those rolling hills is caves. There are a lot of caves underground in Kentucky, and one of the most famous caves is maybe a cave that you have heard of. It's called Mammoth Cave. Mammoth Cave is the longest cave system in the world. When I was younger, we would go on field trips down to Mammoth Cave because it was things that you take school children to do. Not just school children, people love to go to Mammoth Cave and see it. And what you'd always do is you'd go tour and you'd see all these things and there's all these lights, but there was one moment in most of the tours that they do, I don't know if they do this in every tour, but there was one moment where they decided to turn off all the lights. So you're in this cave and they said, we're going to shut off all the lights for just a moment and we want everyone to be very quiet. And we want you just to notice how dark the darkness is. And I vividly remember these moments because they would turn off the lights and you could put your hand right in front of your face and do this as much as you wanted and there was no difference. You couldn't see anything. It was completely dark and they'd only do that for a short moment because there was lots of kids there. And many times kids would start to get frightened because it was completely dark. Darkness has always been a symbol of suffering, of fear, of aloneness, of the unknown. And as we saw last week in the book of Ruth opens in the dark. The book of Ruth opens, chapter 1 says, it's set in the time of the judges, when everyone does what is right in their own eyes. Then we find immediately that there's a famine in the land. There's no food. So Naomi and her husband Elimelech and her sons move to Moab so that they can be provided for. But in Moab, her sons marry. But soon, Naomi's husband dies. And before Naomi's daughter-in-laws can have children, Naomi's sons also die. This is in a time when there is not the same sort of social safety net that we have. A time when your husband was your provider and protector, when having children was security for the future. And Ruth and Naomi find that everything has been taken from them. They're coming back to the land of Israel, hearing that the Lord has met them, that now there is food to eat. But it seems like everything has been stripped from them. Naomi says in chapter 1, verse 12, I have no hope. I have no hope. I have no husband. I have no children. My daughter-in-law is a Moabite who probably no one will want to marry. So she renames herself Mara, which means bitter. Because my brain works in strange ways, it reminded me of the great words of Lloyd Christmas to Harry when he said, we've got no food, we've got no jobs, and our pets' heads are falling off. This is the situation that Ruth and Naomi find themselves in. But in chapter 2, we start to see there is still hope. Hope is a firm confidence that there is better things ahead. It's a firm confidence that there are better things ahead. God has a plan that goes beyond what Ruth and Naomi can even imagine. And the author of this book, towards the end, is going to point that out. He's writing way in the future. Whoever is writing this is writing way in the future. He's looking back on this story and saying God has a plan for these two women. So we continue this week with our Advent series. Advent is a time where we remember the coming of Christ in his birth. The book of Ruth is not ultimately about Ruth or Naomi. It's ultimately about the future birth of Jesus Christ, who is from Ruth's line. Because from Ruth's line comes King David. And from David's line comes Jesus Christ. In Ruth 2, we begin to see this theme of hope is developed. And as we read the story of Naomi and Ruth, I think it's appropriate for you to think through a time when you were in the dark, when you were afraid, when you felt alone, when there seemed to be no hope, when you felt there was no one there for you. As Naomi and Ruth are God's people, so we are God's people. And he promises both of us hope in the darkness. So let's look at our text and see three ways we can have hope in the dark. In the first part of our story, verses 1 through 7, we see God's providence at work. We begin to see in verse 2 where Ruth says to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grains after him in whose sight I shall find favor." Ruth and Naomi have no way to sustain themselves. Their situation is dire. Their only option is to go out into the grain fields and basically gather the leftover grain. A little history is helpful here, for God's law commanded Israelites not to reap to the field, to the edge of their field, or gather the gleanings that fell to the floor. But they were to leave these leftovers for the poor and the sojourner. So in Leviticus 19, verses 9 through 10, you can read about this. Israelites were called to provide for the poor in this way. And Ruth and Naomi know this, so they're going into the field to glean from the leftovers. This might seem really far removed from our culture, but if we modernize it, and this doesn't work in every way, but if we modernize it, Ruth and Naomi are those who stand at the exit to the highways and ask for leftovers. Ruth and Naomi are those who wait in line at the soup kitchen, hoping for a meal. They are those who have no other way of sustaining themselves, so they must go and pick what falls to the ground. And it's into this situation that a small ray of hope shines. Verse 3, look at verse 3 with me, says that as Ruth set out to glean, she, and I want you to underline this word if you have a pen, and if you have a phone, don't underline it, but she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. She happened to come. This word happened is one you should think about because it's ironic. The author's point is this didn't happen by chance. As you look at the larger story, it's clear that God is directing every step of this story. She didn't just happen to come upon Boaz's field. She was directed to Boaz's field by God himself. And the rest of this section details how Boaz notices Ruth. In some ways, you can look at this scene like a rom-com movie. They first catch each other's eyes here. Boaz comes into the field. Maybe his hair is waving in the wind, right? And he asks, "Who is that? Who's that girl over there who's gathering in my field? I would like to get to know her." And the workers say, "Well, she's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi. She's been here all day reaping except for a short rest." So what we see in the first 7 verses, we see that God directs Ruth to Boaz's field. He sovereignly does this. And I just want to step back and help us think about what a story like this teaches us and what a section like this teaches us. This story reveals to us that even when we are into the dark, we can trust the providence of God and take the next step. Even when we are in the dark, we can trust God's providence and take the next step. Ruth doesn't know what the future holds. Ruth doesn't seem to know who Boaz is. As you read this story, she's not sure who he is. It's Naomi who has to tell her later on who Boaz is. And Ruth has 3 strikes against her as she goes to gather in this field. She's a foreigner, she's a widow, and she's poor. She's a foreigner, she's a widow, and she's poor. And she doesn't know if she will ever have any family outside of Naomi. We don't know that she's barren, but she was married for 10 years before her other husband died. And she did not have any children. That's not normal in that time, to not have children if you can. So she might even think, "I'm barren at this point." But what does she do? She wakes up in the midst of all of this, not knowing where am I going to get my next meal. She wakes up in Israel, a new land, and she takes the next step. She takes the next step and goes out to gather grain. And in the midst of her faithfulness, God is working behind the scenes to provide for her. God's providence simply means that Christians don't believe in chance, in luck, or in happenstance. We believe that God ordains all things. We believe that we are not simply corks bouncing around in the ocean, going wherever the waves might be, but rather we are on God's vessel destined for the shore that he has determined. Providence is not a doctrine that you try to philosophically get behind and figure out. As one pastor said, providence is a pillow that you lay your head on at night. That you trust the Lord, that he is working. You're not trying to figure out exactly what he's doing because you can't figure that out. But you trust that he is working. And notice that God's providence doesn't make Ruth inactive. God's providence doesn't make her sit at home and saying, Lord, Yahweh, I've heard. You are the one who gives all bread to all people. I've even heard that in the Exodus, you rained manna down on your people. So would you provide for me now as I sit here? That's not what she does. If you actually look throughout Ruth, there are no explicit dramatic miracles. There's no explicit dramatic miracles. No, God is working in the mundane situations of life, and Ruth goes outside, and God meets her in the field. Every decision that we make, even the smallest one, like getting out of bed in the morning, communicates something about what we believe about God. And Ruth, getting up and going to gather in the field, communicated something that she believed about God, that he was and is sovereign, and that he would provide for her. Ruth got up, she went out into the field, she trusted God's providence and took the next step. So let me ask you, when the times of darkness come for you, what do you do? What do? Do you distract yourself with Netflix? Do you numb the pain? Do you get really busy and try not to think about it? Do you try to fix everything yourself? Do you curl up in bed and not want to get out of bed? Because you're so down and you don't know what to do? This text reminds us to place ourselves in the sovereign hands. To place ourselves in his palm, and to take the next step. Just to take the next step. Ruth steps out into the field and says, Lord, I trust you. Will you provide for me now? The message of Ruth is that we can trust God even in times of darkness. Well, in the next part of the story, verses 8 through 18, we learn the second thing we can do to have hope in the dark. We can find shelter in God and receive God's mercy. Throughout this section, we see God's mercy upon Ruth through Boaz. We can see this in three ways. First, we see Boaz offers the gift of his presence. Look at verse 8 with me. This is what Boaz says to her. He says, now listen, my daughter, do not go glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Boaz says, stay in this field. Reap only in this field. Don't go to another one. Stay close to me and my people. So he offers her, this is my presence, this is my field, stay here. And why does he do that? This is the second thing we see. The second reality is Boaz promises Ruth protection. We see this in verse 9 when he says, have I not charged the young men not to touch you? Implied here was that gleaning could be dangerous, especially for a single woman at this time, because she would be out in the field, helpless, and sometimes would be taken advantage of. But Boaz says, stay near to my field. I will protect you. My young men will protect you. And finally, we see provision. So presence, right? Protection and provision. In verses 14 through 16, Boaz and Ruth sit down for the first date over some appetizers. And they eat bread, and she dips it in the wine, and she eats until she's satisfied. And did you notice this? And she even has some left over. Have you heard that phrase in Mark? She even has some left over. This is pointing to Jesus feeding the 4,000 and the 5,000. But we see Boaz's provision for her, and that he tells the young men, he doesn't just eat with her, but he tells the young men in the field to leave extra for Ruth. Actually, pull out some as you're going along and leave extra for Ruth. And she walks away with an ephah of barley. Now, I don't work in ephahs usually, nor do I work with barley, so I have no idea what that meant. So I had to look up exactly what that meant. That's a ton of barley. That's like 30 to 50 pounds of barley. This is what a donkey would usually carry. So Ruth is coming back from the field, basically weighed down with all of the food that she's got. And not only that, but she was able to stop and eat herself with Boaz, and she shares this with Naomi. Well, it's in the middle of these verses that Ruth asks Boaz, "Why have I found favor in your eyes? I'm a foreigner. I'm a widow. I'm poor." And this is what Boaz says to her in verses 11 through 12. Look at verses 11 through 12 with me. He says, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Ruth is rewarded by Boaz because she has taken refuge under the wings of God. And as we step back again from this text, we can see the second thing we learn, and it's this: as we take refuge in God's wings, we receive his mercy. As we take refuge in God's wings, we receive his mercy. Ruth is in the midst of darkness, and she knows that her only hope is to hide herself under the wings of God. Psalm 91:4 says, "God will cover us with his feathers, and under his wings we will find refuge." God is regularly compared in the Old Testament to a bird who gathers their young under their protective wings. And a bird's feathers are known to be fantastic forms of protection against the cold, against the rain, against wind, against snow, and against danger. And their wings are not only strong, but they're tender and soft. Ruth knows that it's in God's shadow that she finds security. She can get up and take the next step and go out into the field to glean, because she is taking shelter under the Lord's wings. I can almost hear Ruth say the Psalms as she goes out into the field. This is what Psalm 25 says. It says, "O Lord, guard my soul. Deliver me. Let me not be put to shame, for I take refuge." Or Psalm 31:1, "In you, Lord, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me." And you can hear Ruth saying this: "Lord, deliver me. I don't know how I got here. I'm in this foreign land. I'm worshiping this God that I just got to know. And I'm with my mother-in-law. We have no children. We have nothing. Lord, in your righteousness, deliver me." And what does the Lord do? He answers her, but he answers her through the person of Boaz. Through Boaz, Ruth is given, I would argue, God's presence, protection, and provision. And I just want to pause and have you notice that God shows his mercy toward Ruth through Boaz. This reminds us God will often use others to be the conduit through which we receive the mercy of God. God will often use others through which we will receive the mercy of God. Sometimes when we call out for God to rescue us from whatever we're going through, we expect him to do this miracle. We expect him to show up physically, to answer us directly, and we miss his mercy through the normal and through the mundane. That God often shows us mercy just through the person sitting right next to you. That's God's mercy to you. And Ruth meets Boaz, and he is merciful to Ruth through the person of Boaz. I debated using this, but I'm going to. It reminds me of the overused parable of the man stuck on the rooftop as the flood approaches. You've all heard it. But he prays to God for help. Soon, a man in a rowboat comes by and he tells him to jump in. And the man says, "No, I've prayed to God. He will rescue me." Then a motorboat comes by and they say, "Hey, jump in, hurry, the flood's rising." And he says, "No, God will rescue me." Then a helicopter comes by, right? And they say, "Grab the rope, hurry, come on, the flood's rising." He goes, "No, I prayed to God that he would rescue me." And so the water rises and the man ends up drowning. And as he goes up to heaven, he looks up to God and he says, "Why didn't you save me? I called out to you." And God looks at him and he says, "I sent a rowboat, a motorboat, and a helicopter. What else did you expect?" This is a somewhat silly story, but the point is, God is often merciful to us in times of darkness through other people. Sometimes we don't have eyes to see it. So while our tendency when things get rough, when we go through times of darkness, might be to go inward, to shut others out, to protect ourselves, we see that what we should do is to go out into our proverbial fields and just look around you. Go to community group. Look around you. Come to church. Look around you. Go to work and look around you. Often, God is being merciful to you through the normal, everyday situations that you are in. Think back, even now, on how God has been merciful to you through others. Think back on how God has sheltered you under his wings through other people ministering to you. Like Ruth, we should simply take the next step and receive the mercy of God through others. As Psalm 2 says, blessed are all who take refuge in him. Well, in the final section of our text, verses 19 through 23, we see the third response we should have in times of darkness. Ruth returns from this field carrying this huge quantity of barley. And Naomi looks at her and says, where have you been today? Like, how did you get all of this? And Ruth tells her, I met a man named Boaz. And Naomi's eyes light up. We know in the story who this figure is, but Ruth doesn't know who he is. She says, praise the Lord. Look at verse 20. Praise the Lord, for he has not forgotten his kindness to us. The Lord has brought us through the dark, but now he's not forgotten his kindness to us. Boaz is one of our close relatives. He is one of our redeemers or kinsmen redeemers. What does that mean? What does it mean to be a kinsman redeemer? In that day, if you lost your income, if you became poor, you could sell your land if you were in debt. But you could also yourself buy it back if you came back into money. This was the land that the Lord God had given you. So you could sell it, but you could buy it back when the Lord provided for you again. But if you couldn't buy back the land, one of your kin could also buy it back for you. That's what it means to be a kinsman redeemer. You were related to them, and you could buy it on behalf of someone else. As one pastor said, a kinsman redeemer had to have three things to buy back the land. They had to have the right to be a family member. They had to be a family member. They had to have the resources, the wealth to do it, and they had to have the resolve, the desire to do that. We're going to see another figure does not have the resolve to do this later on in the story. Naomi is hopeful that Boaz might be the one with the rights, the resources, and the resolve to be their kinsman redeemer. So Ruth tells Naomi all that has happened, and Naomi tells Ruth, stay close to Boaz. Stay close to this man. Do not leave his field. Something might happen. And as we step back again, we learn two things for our own times of darkness, one from Naomi and I think one from Ruth. What we can learn here is that Naomi is one who has eyes to see hope even in the midst of darkness. You can imagine Naomi's at home. Maybe she's too old to gather now. And she's thinking, what did my life come to? How did I get here? I have no grandchildren. I've got nothing. She's waiting at home. And then Ruth comes home. And she's got all this food with her, and she's like, where have you been? And you can imagine maybe some bitterness. I mean, she calls herself bitter, has started to seep into her mind. But no, Naomi can start to see God's plan start to unfold for her. She has eyes to see. She can see through the fog of doubt and despair, and she knows God has not abandoned us. There is a glimmer of hope here. You have met Boaz, who is a kinsman redeemer. And I think the amazing thing about this text is that the author is asking us, do you have eyes to see? Do you have eyes to see who Boaz actually represents? Boaz is not only Naomi's kinsman redeemer, but ultimately points to our great kinsman redeemer, who will come from the line of Ruth, Christ himself. When Jesus comes to earth, the New Testament describes him coming as a light shining in the darkness. He is now the one who walks through the fields and provides for his people. And he comes to his people who are languishing, who are starving, who need his help. Think of the feeding of the 4,000, the 5,000. And he provides for his people. And does he have the right to redeem us? Yes, he does. For he became a human just like. He is one of us. He is related to us. That is what we celebrate during Advent season. Jesus was born. The Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, was born. He was born of a woman. He took on flesh. He was carried as a baby. He learned to walk. He fell down. He cried. He laughed. He had sorrow. He experienced pain. He became like us in every respect except sin. And therefore, he has the right to redeem us because he is our kinsman. He is like us. And does he have the resources to redeem us? Yes, he does. Not only did he become like us, but he didn't ever sin. And because he never sinned, he doesn't owe death a penny. So when he went down to the realm of darkness and it tried to overcome him, it couldn't because the light of Jesus blinded death in Hades, and he took the gates of hell and he tore them down and he rose with the power of an indestructible life. He has the resources of life to redeem you, and he offers us now that life. See what Boaz is doing? He's providing life for Ruth. She has no food, and he gives it to her, and Christ gives us all his life because he has abundant life because he is the Son of God. He is full of light and life, and he gives that to us. He has the resources to redeem us. But does he have the resolve? Does he have the resolve to redeem us? In the temptation, the devil comes to him and he says, if you will bow down before me, I will give you all the kingdoms of this earth. And Jesus says, no, not this way. I must go to the cross to redeem a people. I will get all the kingdoms of this earth. But I want a people with me. I want a people with me. I could reign over all this, yes, if I bow down before you. But if I do that, I will not redeem a people. So he looks at Satan and he says, be gone. I must go to the cross. And then we just read about this in Mark. When Peter comes to him and he says, Lord, no, you cannot suffer. You cannot die. What does he say to him? He says, get behind me, Satan. I must go to the cross. And then in the Garden of Gethsemane, when he's praying, he looks to the Father and he says, not my will be done, but yours. I have the resolve to go to the cross for my people. He resolved to the last drop of his blood, unto death, to himself, to redeem us. So ultimately, the book of Ruth comes to us in our times of darkness and says, open your eyes. Open your eyes like Naomi, and don't you see that God doesn't leave you in the dark? God doesn't leave you in the dark. The light of the world has come. As Zechariah proclaims in Luke, the tender mercy of our God has visited us. The tender mercy of our God has visited us to give light to those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the way of peace. So Naomi looks at Ruth, and what does she tell her? She says, stay near to him. Don't leave his side. And don't you hear these words ringing out to you and to me? Stay near to your kinsman redeemer. Stay near to Christ when all seems lost. Stay near to his word. Stay near to him in prayer. Stay near to him by gathering with the church. Stay near to him by fasting. Stay near to him when you are in the dark. So many people will run from Christ. And Naomi looks at Ruth and says, no, don't leave his field. And I just want to plead with you, don't leave his field. Don't leave it. So many Christians start out well. Isn't this what the Bible says? They start out well, and then troubles come, and they start to back away. They start to walk out of the field because it's too hard. I don't understand. He's not meeting me. He's not providing me like I thought he would. I've got other things to do. For us, the temptation here, I think, is so much just to begin to drift slowly into worldliness. Yeah, I'm a Christian, but I don't really, you know, it's not a big part of my life. I really care about other things more. And Naomi looks at Ruth and says, stay near to him. This is the only way redemption will come. This is the only way. And so you, in the times of darkness, or whatever time you're in, you have to stay near to him. If you don't stay near to him, you will not be redeemed. You will not. Stay near to him. Let me conclude. When you go down into the Kentucky caves and you wave that hand in front of you, you can't see anything. Maybe you feel like you're at that point right now in your life. Maybe you don't even know how to take the next step. The book of Ruth doesn't promise your situation will be fixed. I don't have time to get into this. But it doesn't promise that everyone gets a Boaz to show up in this life. Many of you read this story and you're like, well, that's great for Ruth and Naomi, but I'm sitting here and I feel like there's no Boaz for me. There's no provider for me. But the point of the story is not really about Boaz. Because the book of Ruth points us to a greater reality that Boaz just represents a small picture of the one who has come for you. And that's what we celebrate at Advent. He has come. He has provided for you. He has promised you his protection, his presence. He will provide for you. God's plan is much bigger than we can imagine. So if we go out into our proverbial fields and we look around, we're like, I would love for something like that to happen. It doesn't. The book of Ruth tells you God still has not left you alone. God has still not left you alone. He has intricately worked out a plan where you are offered salvation. You can see that in this story. Back in the days of the judges, this plan included a poor, widowed foreigner named Ruth. And if that is the case, you can trust him that every part of your life is under his providential hand. You can have hope in the dark because Jesus showed up. What is the song that we just sang? Say, come, barren, weeping, waiting. Christ has come. Come. Come to him. Stay near to him. Find shelter under him.